The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time again for Political Breakfast. Want to welcome back everybody. The whole team is here today, Brian Robinson and Theron Johnson. And want to say hello, welcome. And we are back to our old ways, listeners. Never fear. Our podcasts have been cut short these past few weeks because, like our slogan, Amplifying Atlanta, we're really doing that inside the WABE studio walls. A lot of reconstruction. We're at a new studio. So we haven't been able to record and get on like we have in the past, but we're back and going strong, and good to see you guys. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you. I hope you guys had a great Memorial Day weekend. I was able to get out to Lake Sinclair, beautiful Georgia Power Lake, and with my family, and it was absolutely fantastic. And now, Nice. And Theron's in the same boat. My kid is now out of school, sitting on the couch, saying she's bored. That is going to be my reality for the next 2 months.
Oh, yeah. Never a dull moment. Yeah, that boredom sets in, 30 minutes into a given activity and just have to keep rotating. You have to keep rotating him. I spent time at the Jazz Festival. That was nice. The City Jazz Festival saw Lettucey last night. So that thousands and thousands turned out. So it was good to see Atlantans show up and support that.
And I, too, Lisa, got a chance to go to the Jazz Festival this weekend. And just shout out to Camille Love and the Office of Cultural Affairs, who put on this amazing event in Piedmont Park. Traffic was maintained. People were civil. Folks were having a good time, and just a great lineup.
People are just happy to be out. So, yeah. So here's
we're the three Atlantans who were not at the Ed Sheeran concert at Mercedes-Benz then. I went to the dentist this morning, and my hygienist had just gone, like, oh, you and everybody else.
Oh, yeah. Missed that one. Before we get into Georgia politics, like we do, want to know what you guys thought of this. And I'm just assuming that you heard because everybody was tuning in. And want you to hear this clip and see if you recognize what I'm talking about.
All right. Sorry about that. We've got so many people here that I think we are kind of melting the servers. Which is a good sign.
So I'm giggling here, and I shouldn't because things happen, right?
That sounds like a presidential rollout to me. That's what I'm hearing.
Oh, wow. What did you guys think of that big Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announcement on Twitter last week? You know, as you know, our listeners know, he was going to announce his run for presidency in a big way. And I think a lot of us would agree it turned into a sort of a debacle. I don't know. It was entertaining. I was one of those sitting on Twitter, just waiting and waiting for it to happen, just thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening to him.
Well, let me tell you, you have with you, Lisa, two people who have spent most of their careers dealing with candidates and campaigns in some capacity. That's not all we do, but we've both done a lot of that. And I hear that stuff as a staffer, not as an American voter, right? Mm-hmm. I am cringing inside because you don't sleep for weeks if you are part of a rollout that has those sort of quirks. You know, I have spent 20 years of my life living in terror of a boss holding a news conference and no media show up, right? I have spent 20 years worried about a technical difficulty. These type things often out of your control, but it's your job as a staffer to not do things that are out of your control. And this was a tremendous risk. Now, give them some credit. They were trying to do something different. They were trying to reach a new audience. Now, my question is this, and I'd be interested in Theron's viewpoint on it too, is that we all are on Twitter. I would imagine our audience for Political Breakfast is on Twitter. But you know who is not on Twitter? most Americans, you're not, the people who are on Twitter probably are voters, but you're not reaching a mass audience unless it's then getting amplified by more traditional media or even ideological media. The issue here was that it was amplified and it made them look incompetent. And it kind of cuts across their narrative that you get the conservative fighter that you want if you like Trump, but we can actually get things done. We delivered on these policies in Florida, whereas Trump just talked about a bunch of policies in Washington. So this idea that we can actually get all of these policies you want accomplished, passed, put into law, kind of rests on this competency narrative. And that didn't come across. That was the message, the takeaway from the rollout wasn't these guys have their stuff together.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a little exhausting. Theron, I know you watch these things closely too. What was your take on it?
Yeah, so initially when I heard that the DeSantis campaign had chosen to roll out their campaign on Twitter, I think we should also add that Elon Musk and another individual who I think was a big contributor to Twitter was on as well. So it immediately, as Brian mentioned, said, oh my God, like having, you know, worked on a reelection campaign for President Obama, so much went into that, how we announced that reelection campaign. Now, mind you, Lisa, that was 11 years ago. You know, we didn't do it on Twitter, but it was definitely not your traditional way to roll out a campaign. Usually you want to have it in a battleground state or a state that you want to win. You have a bunch of people behind you. You have people sort of set up to do on-air interviews, testimonies about why this man or woman should be president. But I also seem to think that maybe it was sort of him trying to a little slap in the face to Trump. You know, he's saying, hey, I'm on Twitter and I want to really use this footage to try to amplify the campaign.
There is no substitute for victory. We must end the culture of losing that has infected the Republican Party in recent years. The tired dogmas of the past are inadequate for a vibrant future. We must look forward, not backwards.
But what's interesting to me is that Ron DeSantis looks so uncomfortable on the retail politics side. I mean, if you look at how he goes around and how he's interacting with voters, he's got to work on that. But I do think it was a debacle. As Brian mentioned, you know, as someone who does a lot of these rollouts locally, nationally, you just want to make sure that they go as well as possible. But I will say this, we've spent a lot of time and a lot of pundits across the country have been talking about this DeSantis rollout. While it does make him look unprepared and makes it look a little amateur, people are talking about him. Mm-hmm. And that's what he needs right now if he's going to be competitive against Donald Trump.
Here at home, state Republicans, with the convention is what, set for June 9th, just days away. And Donald Trump is the keynote speaker. You know, of course, you know, we talked about Governor Kemp backing out on that. But now this is going to be a platform for Trump. And I don't know, I'm thinking if CNN was a platform, this surely is going to be a major platform for him as well.
This will certainly bring more national attention to the Georgia GOP convention than we've ever seen, mm-hmm. maybe even a live feed from the convention hall, which, again, mm-hmm. not something that we've seen even locally, much less nationally. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also going to drive a much bigger turnout amongst delegates. Often there's a lot of folks who sign up and then at the end of the day decide not to make the trip to Columbus and rent a hotel room for two nights and do all of that stuff. So I think those folks are going to show up in droves. It's going to be a big crowd because of this. And the most important thing coming out of this convention, though, is going to be electing new leadership. The current chairman, David Schaefer, is stepping down, not running again. There are two candidates in the race. And, you know, whoever those two wins, one of their major jobs is going to be repairing the relationship between the party infrastructure and the statewide elected Republicans who aren't even going to this convention because the relationship is so damaged. Mm-hmm. And it is not unified. And of course, you know, that convention delegate set is more conservative than the Republican primary at large, even though the primary itself is full of very conservative voters. the convention folks are to the right of them. And if they were the ones who determined our nominees, Brian Kemp wouldn't be governor. In fact, Stacey Abrams probably would be, because we would have nominated somebody who couldn't win a general. You know, we the primary elected the guy, nominated the guy who could win. So, I mean, there's some, in, you know, if the party doesn't right itself and correct that relationship, it's going to veer into irrelevancy, in my opinion.
Darren, I can't see you right now, but I bet you're shaking your head because you don't like to give Donald Trump a platform of any kind. Yeah. But what are your thoughts on this?
Well, listen, so, you know, that's what I love about this podcast, Lisa, because unlike being on television, you only have 45 seconds and maybe 60 seconds. point. So just bear with me here. I promise not to do that. All right, so let's unpack this. So you have Governor Kemp, who literally went on a national media circuit a couple months ago now, and said, hey, if the Republicans are going to win in Georgia and they're going to win nationally, they got to move on from the 2020 election, right? And he really laid out how Republicans can make a move to the middle. You can be more appealing to more diverse audiences. You can be for something. You can be about the economy. And then, of course, the governor attacked Joe Biden, President Biden. Mm-hmm. So I want to stop there. So at that point, Lisa, you heard all these Republicans saying, "Oh, we've moved on from Trump. We're gonna move on, and we're gonna start bringing people together. We want to be a bigger tent party to try to talk about issues that matters to Americans." So then you have this convention, and you have Chris Carr, Brian Kemp, and who else? John King,
Brad Raffensperger.
So you have four constitutional officers who say, hey, we're not going to the convention. So, all right, you're still thinking, all right, the Georgia GOP, they're kind of moving on from Trump. And then boom, Lisa, out of nowhere, here comes the former president. Not only is he going to just, you know, be in the state, he's going to speak at the convention. And the only constitutional officer who has remained steadfast that he's going to attend is Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones. And so where I'm going with this, and I just want our listeners to kind of understand where we are in Georgia, Republicans are basically fighting against themselves, right? Because they want to move on from Trump, but then they're scared to criticize him for when he decides to come into the state and speak to the Republican base. I do agree with Brian that party goers tend to be a little bit more to the left on the Democratic side, a little bit more to the right on the Republican side. But one thing that they do bring to the table are boots on the ground, women and men who are going to stomp in their counties to make sure you have the type of voter turnout. So what I'm anxious to see is that, Lisa, which Georgia GOP is going to come out of this convention? Are you going to agree with the governor and John King and Chris Carr and Raffensperger saying, hey, we want to move on from the Georgia GOP, which has had some challenges, and we want to move on from Trump? Or are they going to continue to do what they've been doing, Lisa, and that is just folding like cheap accordions and saying, hey, well, we know the former president is bad, but look at his approval ratings. We don't want to get sideways with him, because Republicans went around on a statewide tour to say, look, we can win if you push back against Trump. We can win if you don't adopt his policies and you don't let him endorse you. But the man is about to be the keynote speaker at the GOP convention. So that's just like us saying, hypothetically, we don't want Hillary Clinton to be in Georgia. We don't think Hillary Clinton helps Democrats win. And then, boom, out of nowhere, she comes and she's our keynote speaker. So I think that Republicans in Georgia are getting away with fooling their voters. I encourage Republicans to hold everyone accountable and say, hey, which side are you on? Are you with Trump or you're not with him? And if you're not with him, then why is he speaking at your party convention? And then if he is speaking at your party convention and he's leading in the polls in Georgia right now, as we sit here, Donald Trump is the preferred candidate for the Republican voters in Georgia, then why are so many Republicans scared to come out and say to tell the truth that Donald Trump is a step backwards for this country, he's a step backwards for this Georgia GOP? But never have I seen a party allow a man to come in and speak when they spent a whole year and a half trying to convey a narrative that they've moved on from. It's just really unbelievable to me.
Let me be your interpreter here of what's going on there, because you're using the universal Republicans here as if it's a monolithic thinking group. Yes, you are hearing people saying they're ready to move on. I would say that's more than a third of the party. And also, the Republicans that you talk to are probably much more establishment or Republican elites, if you want to use some of that kind of terminology. It's not the people who are in that convention hall. They've never wavered from Trump. They probably were the people who more than anyone else voted for the folks Trump endorsed in the primaries last year. So it's two different groups of people. You know, to break it up fairly in a general sense, this isn't, don't hold me to these numbers, but you've got a third of the party that is always Trump. You've got another third that is, we're very appreciative of his presidency. We thought he did a great job, but it's time to give somebody else a chance. And then you've got a smaller fraction of the party, probably not a full third, that was never Trumpers. That's probably 10 to 15%. So it's a diverse viewpoint within the party, and it's such a polarizing one that we'll see how well the party can come together. You have to imagine that if Trump is the nominee, which to Theron's point, he's right. If Trump is winning in Georgia, tell me where he can lose, right? Because Georgia's the one place that has shown it's willing to buck him to some degree and go its own way. Did that with Carr, Kemp, Raffensperger, King, etc. So if he's winning here, I don't know where he's going to lose. And so you can think those always Trumpers will be there. The ready to move owners will come back for sure. The never Trumpers won't. And look, who are the never Trumper Republicans? Well, they live in North Fulton. They live in North DeKalb. They live in East Cobb. They live in Sandy Springs. You know, those are the folks, Western Gwinnett. Those are the people who will determine who wins Georgia's electoral votes. And, you know, that's my concern as a Republican. I really believe in my bones, I believe that if Republicans simply nominate a governor or even a U.S. senator, governors are better because they have that executive experience, the decision-making experience. Between the ages of 45 and 65, the Republicans will win. I believe that. I don't even just randomly pick a Republican governor and they will beat a president who obviously has severe mental decline ongoing and looking forward to his mid-80s with a very unpopular vice president behind him.
Yeah, Lisa, you know, the thing about this is that I intentionally kind of baited Brian into sort of really letting our listeners into his head and what the Republicans are sort of trying to figure out here, because, you know, I think Democrats, we need to do a better job of calling this out. I mean, we have one president, Joe Biden. Now, don't get me wrong. Uncle Joe, I love him to death. He comes with some pluses and he comes with some minuses, right? But we can bring B.O. back to town, Barack Obama. Hillary, maybe, I think that'd be a little risky, but we could, right? And so what you just heard from my good friend Brian Robinson, Lisa, is sort of trying to orchestrate a victory, and they're trying to, I don't want to say ignore, because that's not what he's suggesting, but they're letting the one-third of the Republican Party who wants Trump go organize and be themselves. What Democrats, what we can't let them do is that when it starts coming down to turnout models, then we got to make sure that they do exactly what they do to us. I mean, Brian Kemp specifically focused on minorities and the black and the brown community, right? He particularly targeted African-American males and he targeted independent, you know, men. What we got to do as Democrats is that if there's a faction of Republican Party right now that's up for grabs because Trump's coming to town or the governor wants to move on, or like Brian said, hey, we want to let those people just be and we want to continue to try to win, then we should be comfortable enough to go after some of those disaffected Republicans that I think are going to be upset that the Georgia GOP is allowing this very popular in some sense, but unpopular in another sense, former president come and speak at their convention. We've got to capitalize on that. And I just really hate that we're not doing exactly what I'm trying to do today, and that is to cause a little good trouble on the Republican side and hope that we can pick up some numbers to come vote for us in next November.
I heard you sigh through that, Brian. So you emphatically say that there's no game here in terms of, you know, supporting Trump here.
You know, I have been taken aback by the strong level of support that Trump has received. If you talk to regular folks, they're like, you know, do these lawsuits matter? Do these indictments matter? And the only logical answer you can give anybody is it doesn't look like it. it doesn't look like any of this has made a difference, and certainly not in the primary, but maybe not even in the general. If you're a supporter of Donald Trump, you know, like, remember when they had the CNN town hall and the crowd laughed when he called the E. Jean Carroll, the lady who sued him for sexual assault and defamation or something like that. They laughed when he called her a lunatic or a crazy woman or something like that. And, you know, they're like, how dare these people laugh at a sexual assault victim? In the mind of the audience, she's not a sexual assault victim. Whether she is or not, I don't know. But to them, they see it as just a pattern of attacks on Donald Trump. They'll throw anything at him to stop him from fighting for us. That's how they see it. They do not see him as someone who committed that act. That's why they laugh, not because they think it's okay, right? That's not what they're doing. So, but his strength continues. It's maintained. And here's the issue to get at the, sort of the background of what Theron is getting at. With all of these people who are ready to move on, and that is a significant portion of the party, why is he still doing so well? Well, the reason why he can still be the nominee is that Republicans, much more so than Democrats, have winner-take-all primaries. The Democrats, they want to be socialist in their voting, spread the votes out, right? You know, they could proportional voting. So if you get 30% of the vote, you get 30% of the delegates, et cetera. We don't do that. If you get 30%, 35%, and you have the plurality, you get all the delegates in most Republican primaries. And so that's how you can become the nominee with the strong base support of one third of the party.
Yeah, and Lisa, real quick, I know you want to probably move on from this topic, but that was exactly where I was about to go with this. You know, this polling shows that Georgia is still Trump country. Matter of fact, I think my fellow Democrats, we need to take that risk. You know, anybody who shows up to that convention, anybody who's there, we got to label them as Trump supporters. But, you know, if you look at his pathway in 2016, I mean, the primary then was difficult. But to Brian's point, now Georgia primaries are now winner take all with the plurality, right? And so if he's leading in the polls and he's coming to speak and you look at where Georgia is on the map, I think Brian and I both agree for economic purposes, but also for party purposes that we wanted that primary to be a little sooner.
Yeah, that's right. It's shared prosperity Trump, here. Yes.
Yeah. So Trump is the nominee. But let me ask you, say this real quick, Lisa. You know, I've been gone for a couple of weeks, so people want me to go harder on this podcast. I believe that there's, and Brian may disagree with me on this and agree, but I believe that there are some Republican stronghold voters out there that truly believe that Donald Trump can beat Joe Biden in a rematch. And they feel like, you know, that the election was stolen, because you still have election deniers. When you have the Secretary of State who literally has come out boldly last week, Lisa, and said, hey, we're going to go and make sure we have election checks in all 159 counties. He didn't target the Democrats. Guess what he said? I know all my election deniers on both sides are going to not agree with this move. And so I just think that there are people out there that are so upset that Donald Trump lost. And we have to remind people that he lost Georgia. So this coalition that Brian is talking about, I still think it benefits Democrats, because all we got to do is make sure that we reestablish that coalition of voting. But it's got to be some type of racial, some type of class, some type of, you know, something into this, or why when people are asked who they want to be their Republican nominee, over 40% of them, close to 50% of people who are polled, are still saying they want Donald Trump. And I just think that DeSantis and Tim Scott, who, you know, we probably won't talk about today, and Mike Pence and Nikki Haley, they're gonna be struggling to try to make a sensible argument in a very divisive Republican primary.
Yeah, I'll end this super quick. Tim Scott, Mike Pence, Nikki Haley, probably Asa Hutchinson, although even I don't know really what Asa Hutchinson's running on or his platform. He is speaking at the state convention also, so maybe he'll make a blip of news as Trump is making a tidal wave of news. But what they are offering is a more aspirational and optimistic and positive view for America. And for me, as someone who loves this country and has just celebrated Memorial Day and showed gratitude for all of those who gave their lives for this great country, that is what I want. I am not an aggrieved American. I am a proud American. And I think that we have options on the table who give us that viewpoint that America is a land of opportunity, and we have to preserve that opportunity for everyone, no matter what your skin color, no matter where you're from, no matter where your ancestors are from. You got a chance here in this country. I think, you know, I was so inspired by Tim Scott's comments, you know, from Cotton to Congress in one generation, and his family talks about. I mean, it is such a great American story. And that's the American that I know and love. That's the America that's worth fighting for, is the one they're talking about. So I'm sorry.
Let me say this.
Give us what you're thinking there. And I see you smiling.
The Republicans right now, and that was very inspirational, B. Rob, and very patriotic, what you just said. But here, newsflash, my brother. Y'all party is so far to the right now. Is even if I gave a speech, I think the GOP probably would be willing to listen to me. And let me just say this about Tim Scott. I don't see how a black man from South Carolina, who's done some good now, who has partnered with Cory Booker on some HBCU funding, I'm going to give him some credit, is going to be able to penetrate a predominantly white male-driven Republican caucus. And I think this inspirational message, Brian, it all sounds good, but you guys are the ones that are out here talking about all the things that's wrong with Joe Biden, talking about all the things that's wrong with this country. You want your country back. You talk about how things are just so bad. I think that Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, Asa Hutchinson, all those people you just named, Mike Pence, are running for a GOP election at the wrong time. That is not the climate in which they're running in right now. And that's why I don't think that they're going to be successful.
Wow.
I don't necessarily think you're wrong. Right? I don't necessarily think you're wrong. I don't think that what I'm saying is representative of the entire party. I wish that I hope that over time we can come back to a positive vision for America, because we have some serious problems. And I don't want to go down a rabbit hole on the debt limit, but what the Republicans in Congress are talking about, I agree with. You know, we've got to do something, some structural change, and we're gonna need strong, good leadership that brings people together to get it done.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you know, here at home, our Governor Kemp, is staying away from all of that convention in Columbus, and seems to be sailing right along, still on his honeymoon. 3 years left in his term, but already people are talking about wanting to be the next governor. Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones being one of them. Are you surprised this talk is starting so soon and coming from Burt Jones and even Chris Carr?
And so Chris Carr made news last week, apparently said something in Savannah about taking a look at running. Burt Jones told the Morgan County GOP that he was going to take a look at it, that he was considering running. Agriculture Commissioner Tyler Harper posted a photo from the Republican Governors Association office in Washington, which was an interesting place for the Ag Commissioner to visit while he was in town. Obviously wanted to make a point with that photo that he posted on his social media platforms. So we're going to have some serious contenders. We're going to have new names pop in, like Kelly Loeffler. She's obviously gunning for something. She's been spending a lot of money through her organization, Greater Georgia, had an event where the speaker, the governor, the lieutenant governor all came, even though there's been some hard feelings there in the past between Kemp and Loeffler when Loeffler didn't endorse him last year in the primary. So what that tells me is that she's putting a lot of money out there, and you got to think she has something in mind. So some serious contenders are beginning to emerge. And going to Kemp, having 3 years left in his term, you know, one thing as somebody who worked in the previous governor's administration is, the you know, Kemp really has one more session where he is the guy with the biggest stick. You know, that 2024 session is a chance for him to spend some political capital and figure out what he really wants to get done, because he can get it done next year. But after that election cycle, you're full on in the 26th election, and a second term governor begins to lose a little bit of relevance. Still very powerful in Georgia, no doubt about it. And we'll see what Kemp does politically. But he's got one more term, one more session to deliver big things. And I hope he does it. And I hope to see a vision from him over these next 6 months on what it would be.
You know, I'm going to be a little messy here, Lisa. I can't believe
these I saw it coming.
I believe these Republicans are already trying to push this governor out. You know, the man's only been in the re-election mode for 1 year, one session. They're already talking about he's all going to be a lame duck. No, I'm just joking. I know Brian is not saying that. No, listen, I think, look, I'll get on the Democratic side real quick. But first, look, Burt Jones is not he's well aware that he's got to find a lane. And I think he believes that his lane is through embracing the Georgia GOP. I'm only sort of paraphrasing what he said. Look, they're having a convention. They invited me. I'm going. And so he clearly is staking out that lane. He's taking some conservative marks. So, you know, Chris Carr is one that, you know, it's good to hear that he made that comment. Many of us in the Georgia politics know that he's been groomed. Sort of his history to maybe take a shot one day at doing something. I think he's been groomed. I think that he's paid his due. And I'm not saying that Burt Jones hasn't been groomed either. But then, you know, you got a dark horse out there. Raffensperger, does he run? Do we have a member of Congress that runs? And then on the Democratic side, you know, we're still getting out of this sort of phase of like what life looks like after Stacey Abrams, even though she's still very much involved in Georgia politics. Just released a book. I know Brian is the first one to go on Amazon.
I want to get a signed copy there. And
you want a signed copy?
I want to go to an event.
So, you know, now we're focused on two things. One, we want to protect Senator Ossoff, who we believe is doing a great job positioning himself for reelection. And then I believe, Lisa, we'll find a woman or a man that's going to be a moderate Democrat that's going to run for governor. And I like our chances right now. I'm looking at the current field on the Republican side. But, you know, we got to first start getting some wins in the session. We got to start, you know, making sure we continue to recruit good candidates. You know, we don't have a money problem anymore. We know how to raise money. But what does that money look like after Abrams is no longer on the ballot? We'll have Warnock on the ballot in 26. So, you know, so John is Senator Ossoff is going to play a pivotal role in that. So we'll be prepared.
Yeah. You know, and interestingly, when you speak of Ossoff and we talk about what Kemp's going to do next, there is some chatter that he's looking at that Senate race. And in the last week, I saw the Super PAC for Kemp spokesperson attack Ossoff on social media. Ossoff was touting some economic development win, and the Kemp team responded, whoa, buddy, that was Governor Kemp, not you, right? So there's obviously already starting to have this push and pull, a little bit of punch throwing. So we'll see. I'll be watching closely to see if Ossoff responds in kind anytime soon.
Let me say this real quick.
That's fun.
One of the reasons Lisa, Brian and I are very careful on this podcast is because not only I don't think Governor Kemp listens to the podcast regularly, but if you do, Governor,
I'd be surprised, Kemp, yeah.
But I do know that First Lady Marty Kemp has tentacles. But more importantly, beyond First Lady Kemp, his staff pays attention to everything. So the sort of clapback on Ossoff, I wasn't surprised about, but man, I got to say this about the senator. And I think Brian may agree with me on this. If you look at what he's doing in Washington, Lisa, I mean, he's not allowing the Republicans to make him out to be this radical Democrat. I mean, he's talking about hydrogen. He's talking about federal investigations into our prison systems. He's kind of figured out a way to inject himself in the Hyundai and SK and EV charging. And so he is going on other Republican shows and showing up at Democratic events. I mean, this guy is running a very, very good Senate office with outstanding constituent services and really you know, doing a good job of putting into press all of his wins. He's co-sponsoring some legislation that's getting passed. He's working across the aisle. So I think he understands what's going to be coming his way, and he's doing everything mm-hmm. he can to remind Georgia voters mm-hmm. about the good work that he's doing in Washington these days.
Yeah, we love him. He's always available. he's always available.
And Brian, you know, Brian was just fantasizing over his hair a few years ago at my house before he became a senator again.
Yeah. As someone who doesn't have good hair, and I totally appreciate the power of good hair in politics. I'll say Governor Kemp has good hair, too. It's, so it could be a good hair versus good hair contest, and it could neutralize the entire issue.
Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs, and government consultant, and most recently a senior advisor to the Biden Georgia campaign. Glad you both were here today. Glad to have everybody back in the saddle. And yesterday was Memorial Day. And Brian, you wanted to pay special tribute to a very special man that we did a story on this morning on Morning Edition. So I'll let
That's
you
right.
share it.
I just wanted to say I love this story about Luther Story, who died in the Korean War 73 years ago, but was mm-hmm. an unknown soldier until he was connected through DNA to relatives in Georgia. And he has been moved from the cemetery in Hawaii to a cemetery back here in Georgia at Anderson, I believe Andersonville Cemetery it is.
Andersonville, right.
And what a heartwarming, wonderful Memorial Day story that this soldier finally gets to come home and once again have honor paid to him for his sacrifice for our country. So thank you, Mr. Story, and to his family for what you gave us.
Yeah, may he finally rest in peace. Army Corporal Luther H. Story is his name. Thanks, guys. See you next week.
Thank you.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now plugged in, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.